Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Tuesday afternoon, and I want to say a little bit about Biden and the current situation from a certain angle, which I'll explain presently. And Baruch Hashem, we have a sponsor. It's Ev Radin in Florida. And now he's a new grandfather. Now there's a new baby. The baby's name is Alexander Yaakov. No, that's a yell it. And this Alexander Yaakov named after his father, which many people remember, Mr. Alex Radin. It's the fourth baby named after my father, whose third yard site is coming up on 27 Sivan. So the Shem Shavuot has the best way to commemorate someone's memory, if possible, through perpetuating the next generation. So, mazel tov to all the family in Boca and elsewhere. I'll tell you where I'm coming from. I've been thinking a lot about Biden lately, as I mentioned. Who people vote for? We'll wait till the year progresses. I think a lot of changes are going to be kicking in American politics, but maybe I'm wrong. But it's just interesting to me, with all the chesronos of the Biden administration, but you see, the president's heart is, so to speak, very pro-Israel. And I know about the holding up the weapons, this, that, and the other, but I'm not getting into all that politics right now. I could, and you have all the stupidity on the comment section, all the different things online, pro and anti. But I saw he give a speech in some college yesterday, I think a black college, and he mentioned something along the lines of what the torches that the Hamas did. I think he said that he saw pictures where they burned the whole family together. His mom's like the Nazis. But therein lies a tale. I want to talk about who Biden, this is my own opinion, obviously, who Biden is as a person growing up pretty much during my lifetime. He's older than me, a lot older than me, but nevertheless, our lives kind of overlap. In other words, he's a product of what I would call the second half of the 20th century in America. That is the very interesting part to me. And I'll tell you what I mean. He's obviously not Jewish as a Catholic from Delaware. But you see, like the Democrats of his tkufa, not necessarily Democrats of today, that depends, but the Democrats of his tkufa, he's profoundly impacted by the Holocaust narrative. And therein lies a tale. Because the Holocaust narrative, which I think most of us are familiar with, is a very specific historical phenomenon and a product of American and Western culture, not necessarily, accepted in the same way in other parts of the world. We view the Jews, of course, as the worst thing ever happened, which it was. They killed 6 million people, or 5.5, however many, it's millions. And in such a cruel ways, and talk of the Nazis, did nothing is beyond them. In other words, whatever the Hamas did, the Nazis did the same thing. And as a lechatchila, not a b'dieved, they like torturing people, as you know. They thought they're doing a great thing. Well, it's not so simple. They hid it away. They tried to hide it, so they knew it's not really such a great thing, but they figured if they win the war, come out of the war surviving, then, after the fact, they'll celebrate the fact that they killed all the Jews. That's the way the Nazi mentality worked, as I understand it. So it's just very interesting because it's very complex. The Holocaust is a very complex matter. And again, I'm Jewish, so I see it in black and white terms. there were the good guys and the bad guys. The Nazis are the bad guys. And the Allied soldiers and countries that fought and bled to wipe out the Nazis, because in the end, the Hitler regime was completely exterminated in 1945, they're the good guys. That's the Americans, the British, and the Russians. I think I told you I once, a number of years ago, went to the Tank Museum, I think they call it in Israel, in Latrun. And there's a vault of tanks there and so forth and so on. And with my kids. I mean, it's quite a fair number of years ago. And I remember when you walk in, at least at that time, they had three tanks, an American tank, a British tank, and a Russian tank from World War II. You know, a Sherman tank and all that, and the Russian T-34 and so forth. And there was a bunch of Ruskies there, you know, Jewish Russians, and they're all standing and saluting because the sign says in Hebrew and in English and in Russian, you know, we salute the soldiers that fought to crush fascism, something to that effect, which is true. So it's a story like a cowboy movie, good guys and the bad guys. And in the end, the bad guys lost. Unfortunately, we lost millions and millions of carbonas. So that, you know, puts a special thing on it, special, you know, a twist on it. But nevertheless, it's a clear narrative. There was an evil guy named Hitler, which is true. And he made the Germans all evil, which is true. And they did evil things, which is true. And they would have gone on to do other evil things, which is true. And fortunately, Hitler and the Germans made a bunch of mistakes, which led them to completely lose the war. And you know, against powerful odds, and the good guys won in the end. Now, here's the thing. That's my spin on it and yours. But the Holocaust, of course, took place in Europe, and the death camps were primarily in Eastern Europe, in the territory of Poland and Eastern Europe in general. I think you know that. I didn't see the Poles ran it, but the Germans ran it in those places. And with the help, by the way, of locals, you know, the Ukrainians now who were crying, and the Lithuanians, the Latvians, and Estonians, and the Belarusians, all were concentration camp guards and were particularly vicious. I mean, all that we know at that time. So here's the thing. Suppose your parents were concentration camp guards and that kind of thing, or helped Hitler in some way or another. You're going to have a funny take on the past. It takes a big person to say like this, my grandfather was evil. I'm not, but he was. It's unfortunate. People usually don't like to do that. And so what they'll say is you have to understand what was going on at that time. Special circumstances, which is quite a statement. You know, because of what was going on in special circumstances, your father participated in mass murders and shooting people in pits and running concentration camps and operating gas chambers, all the rest of it. It's not an easy argument to make, but they make it. But here's the funny thing. The Ribbono Shel Olam so runs the world that in 1945, when the war was over, and for the next 45 years, from 1945 to 1990, the peoples of those countries that had been complicit and participated in the killings and the torturings and had such a big record of anti-Semitism, not all of them, but most, were silenced like with a muzzle over their mouth. They couldn't get their story out because the Soviet Union occupied Eastern Europe and much of Central Europe. Stalin, in other words, conquered. When the Red Army came in, yes, they defeated the Germans. That is true. No question about it. At great price. But then they proceeded to conquer and torture the captive peoples of the countries that they had kicked the Germans out from. So in other words, the Red Army came in, the Stalin's army in 44, which is the Yeshua for the Jews. Read the stories about the Covenant Ghetto and all that, you know. It was a Yeshua for the Jews. But was it a Yeshua for the Lithuanians, the Latvians, the Estonians, the Ukrainians, and the Poles, and the Hungarians, and the Romanians, etc., etc.? No, not to them. Because they were saved from one devil, but they were taken over by another. The Stalinist communist business was experienced by them as something horrible torture. They really hated the fact that the Russians were conquering them, and in many countries they fought back for a long time. In Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, there was a guerrilla warfare against the Russians, also in the Ukraine, from 1945 to 1950, and maybe even after. The Russians were very good at hiding this, so the world, as far as I know, wasn't aware of this. There was almost a guerrilla warfare going on at that time, but Stalin was so ruthless that, you know, eventually he was able to crush it. I mean, it was a major war going on, you understand? Major war going on. And therefore, let's say, for example, off the top of my head, Lithuania was no longer a country, it was a province of Russia, what they call a Soviet republic, and it was run by a bunch of communists, and nobody could be a Lithuanian patriot, they kill you, and there's nothing you could do about it. What about the fact that Lithuania has its own history? Same thing repeated in Latvia, Estonia, Ukraine, Hungary, and Czechoslovakia, and so forth. But I'm just saying, this was the communist dictatorship, which lasted for 45 years, and secret police, all the rest of it. Now, the main idea was these people shouldn't develop any kind of nationalism on their own and try to go against Russia. And they were pretty good at what they did, the Soviets. Pretty efficient. And therefore, for 45 years, you know, with a small blow up here or there, the nations were these nations I'm talking about a dozen of them, were smothered and muzzled. So they couldn't say nothing. What about what had happened in World War II and their own role in it, including the fact that they participated in the Holocaust? Here I said participate in the Holocaust. That's a funny thing. When the war was over, Stalin, who became more anti-Semitic after 1945 than he was before, you know what I'm saying? Even after the Hitler thing, Stalin became worse, as far as the Jews are concerned, than he had been before, okay? So he decided, right? Stalin decided that he didn't want the Jews to have their own narrative for a whole bunch of reasons. So there were Soviet Jews, intellectuals and stuff like that, who wanted to put together what they called the Black Book, which would list all the specific Zaken that were done to the Jews in the territory of the Soviet Union by the Nazis. They burned whole peoples alive in villages, and they mass murdered people in graves and constantly, you know that. Plus, they did Stalin tortures. You know, they were very, extremely sadistic. You know that. And these Soviet Jewish intellectuals who, during World War II, tried as hard as they can to help Stalin win the war, they were shut down after 1945. Stalin got it in his mind that they're trying to secede from Russia and establish a state of Israel in the Crimea. There actually was some thought of that. I'm not going into that now, right? And he shut them down. In fact, he killed a bunch of them. This is all famous stuff from the late 40s and early 50s. Down to the end. In fact, I think you know this. By the time he was getting to the end of his life, he was going to do his own Holocaust. Really. But he dropped dead in Purim. Or he got a stroke in Purim and dropped dead later in 1953. And so the Soviet Union and their culture had a very decided attitude in terms of the historical narrative of what happened during the years 1939, 1945, and specifically what happened in terms of the Holocaust. And they adopted the idea that, first of all, Kulo Yafarai Si Mumin Bach, all the peoples that now in the Soviet Union, the Lithuanians, the Latvians, the Estonians, the Ukrainians, the Belarusians, this, that, and the other, the Poles, they were all anti-Hitler from day one, and they were good people, and they were simply victims. And yes, the fascists did a lot of bad stuff. And yes, there were a couple of Jews in there also who got hurt. But mainly it was the Goyim. And the great Soviet Union saved them. Because you see, you can't go into the history. If you go into real history, I mean, Stalin was friends with Hitler from 1939 to 1941, and it only changed because Hitler attacked him. Stalin killed millions of people and put them in concentration camps, as you know. A lot of things the Russians said, oh, the Germans did terrible things. I mean, the Russians did it too, to their own, you know, peoples. You don't want to go there. So they had to very carefully doctor and tailor the story of what happened in World War II, half acknowledging, yes, there was some kind of a Holocaust, but not granting the Jews any kind of special status in it. Not agreeing that Hitler's main target was the Jews, and he organized a whole, you know, organized campaign to kill everybody, Taf and Oshim, V'yom Echad. We know this. And so the Soviet Union also went on to be anti-Israel. Anything you say about the Holocaust helps Israel. And so all over Eastern Europe, the communist countries, not only the USSR, but again, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Ukraine and Belarus, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, all those places, they kind of like had like a blank spot when it comes to the Jewish experience during World War II. You see? It's very interesting. And therefore, with the rarest of exceptions, there were no Holocaust, there was no Holocaust literature or anything like that coming out of the communist countries after World War II. And the rare exceptions, you know, kissed up to the Russians and made it sound like it's not, you know, a universal genocide against the Jews, but it was something against the, you know, the all the peoples of the Eastern Europe. And you know, the Jews are one of them, but, you know, but I won't say minor, but certainly not major part of that tragedy. This is part of the sheker that was the Soviet Union. That's what they were, Zalma the Shikra. Remember, he said, everything's great here. We live in a workers' paradise. Anybody who disagrees with this gets shot. You know the Russians. Adayom Azed, they're like that. And that's why I'm having the war with the Ukrainians and so on and so forth. So that's very interesting because what it means is, because of that policy, no history or no narrative concerning the Holocaust against the Jews emerged from the countries where it took place. And instead, the entire narrative of what happened 1939 to 45, like Legabe the Jews, was constructed in the West and not in the East, in the non-communist countries and not in the communist countries. Since America and Western Europe had freedom of speech, and since the Jews enjoyed a certain position after the war as the victims of Hitler, which of course they were, he made it that anti-Semitism, at least for my youth, was, usher. Now it's coming back, but it's usher. The Arab world, of course, was never makabel any of this. But the Western world, and the parts of the world that are influenced by the Western narrative, they basically had only one group talking about and working on the events of 1939 to 45, and that was Jews and Jewish sympathizers. So in other words, there's such a thing called a history of Holocaust books. I mean, history books, right? History books. And eventually novels. And eventually movies. And all the instruments of mass media. So if you live in America or Western Europe or those kind of places that are Western in their cultural attitude, Latin America even and so forth, what did you know from, let's say, 1945 to 1990 about what had happened to the Jews in World War II? You knew what the Jews said and people like the Jews. And there certainly is plenty of material to work with. As you can say, Hitler was a satanic person. The regime was a satanic regime, which was out to exterminate Klal Yisrael in a unique frenzy. They killed other people along the way. Yes, maybe he was going to do that in the future, But the main target was the Jews. What was unique was the experience of the Jews, where they rounded up everybody they could get all over Europe, even if you're converted, as you know, even if you're old and crippled and so on and so forth. It's unbelievable, Achazarias. And it was designed specifically against the Jews. And therefore, the Jews are the unique victims of the Holocaust. Again, they're not denying that there were other people who were killed too. And at that time, you never heard about gays and gypsies and things like that. So it was a Jewish thing. So if you... And the guy had no trouble with this. Out of sense of guilt, for a whole bunch of reasons. It conformed to liberalism. And remember, the American soldiers did liberate the camps and they saw with their own eyes, and they took movies of what the Germans had done in the concentration camps. You know what I mean? It's kind of funny because really the Americans and the British never really did get to the Iker place. The Iker places are in Eastern Europe, you know, like Auschwitz and Chelmno and Majdanek and all that, which were actually destroyed, most of them by the Germans before the Russians showed up. But even the lesser camps like in Dachau and those other places like where my father was and all that, Mauthausen, it was plenty bad. And there are plenty of dead bodies lying around that you can see the old newsreels. And all the top Americans from Eisenhower down went to see him, and so on and so forth. So this phenomenon that the Germans waged several wars during World War II. I'm giving you an interpretation of history. I'm giving you a specific narrative. One war they waged was against the American Army, the British Army, the Russian Army. Right? Another war they waged was oppressing the occupied countries. You know, France, the Benelux, wherever the Germans ruled. You know, and they were very harsh to them and so on and so forth, like all the movies you see. And a third war was against the Jews. In fact, there are books called Hitler's War Against the Jews, which was a distinct feature of the years 1939 to 45. And Hitler did terrible things to the Jews. So in other words, starting with after 45 and picking up steam in the 50s and 60s, and then really taking off in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, was the story of World War II as a war against the Jews. Again, I'm not nobody denied, obviously, that there was a war against the Goyim also, but there was a unique war against the Jews. And who wrote these things? Jews mostly, because there was no gate to them, where they survived it, or they knew people like that, or they felt it. But non-Jews also, who's that guy, John Hersey, for example, who wrote about the Warsaw Ghetto, being a particularly catching, type of, phenomenon. And if anything, it picked up steam. Right after the war, people in the West felt guilty because they had collaborated with Hitler also in many ways. But by the 50s, especially by the late 60s and 70s, I remember, all of a sudden, the Holocaust became, what shall I say, a cool topic, sexy topic or something like that. And movies and millions of books and newspaper articles and art and all kinds of things like that became an important part of the modern culture. Now, wait a second. What about the Lithuanians, the Poles, and all the... Nobody heard from them. Why? They're muzzled by the Soviets. They live in a world in which, like I said before, all the peoples of the East and the governments of the East were perfect. They behaved entirely correctly and mercifully all during those years, which was a lie. And since we're all living a lie, so nobody in the West paid attention to anything that he said. When the Russians said, we don't need a monument in the Soviet Union, like in Babi Yar or wherever, to the dead Jews who were massacred in tens of thousands in big pits. It wasn't against the Jews, it was against all the Soviet citizens. When they said that, everybody in America and the Western, they said, I guess, that's the Russian baloney, I could use harsher terms. And they're, what do you expect from the Russians? The big liars. And so, the uniqueness of the Holocaust became a basic feature of Western culture in the second half of the 20th century. And I'm talking about people who are not Jewish. Eventually, they taught these courses in schools. Like I said, the movies are filled with them. So are the novels. I mean, I haven't read many of them, but, you know, it became a famous thing. I'll just say Elie Wiesel, for example, to give one example of many. And it's just, it became a formative experience of being a person living in America or the West. Now, at the time I'm talking about, there wasn't any Muslims in the country. Didn't have this immigration that happened later. And so you're talking about a Christian America, a Christian Europe, a Christian this and the other. And they said, listen, terrible things happen. To a certain degree, we're all guilty. And one of the ways we atone for this is to help Israel. You understand? Help Israel. Even Germany, which felt very uncomfortable with the past, early on, maybe Truman twisted their hand, but nevertheless, early on, in 1952, the new Germany cut a deal with Israel to give them like almost $1 billion by way of reparations and things like that. And then the Germans discovered, Taka, that, you know, it's not so bad. You own up, you see, Osham no begadnu. People admire your honesty. It does not hurt the German economy at all. And it's, you know, zeneva zenene. That's the way it's been. So it's a strange thing that happened after the Second World War. But now think, if you're Joe Biden or that generation of senators and congressmen. He came in, I think, in the 70s. So if you're like that, who were the Jews? They're persecuted people. They're tucked in danger. I completely understand why there has to be a state of Israel. As Biden himself said right after October 7th, if there wasn't Israel, no Jew would be safe anywhere. He said those words. The liberal Jews are like, oh, what are you talking about? But he's from that generation. If he's 80, so what's he born? During World War II, right? If he's 24, he's born in 44, 45, something like that. Right? So in other words, he's growing up as a young man exactly in the years I'm talking about. And everybody in America growing up knows World War II had one side, which was this unbelievably vicious and evil and cruel war, unparalleled. You know what I just said? Unparalleled against the Yidden. And one of the responses is Israel. And this is something we have to take care of. I mean, even Nixon, I remember, saw in an ad. He said, well, America's always going to help Israel, right or wrong. And I think it was Ted Koppel said, why? You can see it online. Why? The Holocaust. Nixon said that. See, he wasn't exactly a Jew lover, but he was part of the post-1945 thing. You understand? And so, the result is, you need an Israel as a kind of safety against another Holocaust. The Jews can't be helpless victims. Everybody knew, because the movies and everything pointed out, that had there been a Jewish state before World War II, you wouldn't have been a Holocaust. You wouldn't have had all those men, women, and children lined up dead in the gas chambers. Just the basic idea, the basic narrative that emerged in the West. And there was no counter-narrative to challenge it. Nobody could say, in polite company, Hitler was right. Nobody could say that they were justified. You know, there were too many Jewish businesses in Germany or something like that. That, first of all, who says that's true? But second of all, even if it's true, that excuses an Auschwitz. You understand? And so, it was unheard of that anyone should challenge anything I just said now in the last 15, 20 minutes. This is part of Torah's Moshe. Okay? Now, I'll say it again. The Arabs were unbelievably frustrated, because they realized that, you know, the West will never be Makabel, their point of view, which is good. It's good. The Arabs are saying, good, Hitler didn't kill enough. We wouldn't have lost Palestine if Hitler would have done the whole job. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who was the leader of the Palestinians, went and hooked up with Hitler. He was right, according to them, right? You couldn't say that. And if you did say it, and many did, they immediately lost total credibility with any kind of Western audience. You understand? And so I remember even Nasser and the others, they said, well, maybe it was a Holocaust, maybe it was bad, but still, the Jews shouldn't take away the land from the Arabs. But the people in the West in general, when I was a little kid and growing up, weren't like that. And so all these claims you hear now in the colleges, they weren't given any time in the day in the light of the terrible suffering and unique suffering the Jews underwent in the war years. Now, what's interesting is, so in other words, here's Joe Biden, I guess growing up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and he's eating all this up, like everybody else did. Only Ribono Shel Olam runs the world, arranged matters that this guy should, in his 70s, in his mid-70s, actually in his late 70s, become president of the United States. I mean, when he retired from Obama after 8 years, everybody thought that's the end of Biden. Meaning that he's old. You know, in other words, he had his career, even rose to vice president, and so on and so forth, and now he'll retire. Nobody could foresee. You have Trump, and you have Corona, and you have this, that, and the other, and some other, and you have all these crazies running for a Democratic nomination. You know, Bernie Sanders, these other idiots. And that, you know, the people, the big money was like this. Biden is normal, so let's back him. But when you got him, you got somebody who grew up in the American culture in which the Jewish voice was the only voice. And for a guy like him, that's how it's going to stay. And therefore, the Jewish people are a unique group. That's the point of the Holocaust narrative. They're a unique group exposed to unique dangers, unlike those felt by anybody else. Because when it comes to the Jews, there are people who will, if they can, kill all the Jews and, like you say, burn them alive, you know, in the worst tortures. That's what they'll do. Now, after 1990, communism collapsed, and all of a sudden these countries, Eastern Europe, found themselves free, and they could say whatever they want. Now, in their minds, they just went through 45 years of hell under Stalin and the other communist rulers. It was terrible. And now, they're free. And so now they wanted to rewrite their own history in their way. How are they going to explain World War II? Many of them collaborated with Hitler. Many of them, like I said before, participated in the Holocaust. Not all, but many. Many of them themselves killed their Jewish neighbors. I'll give you an example. The Litvaks, Lithuanians, when Hitler invaded, before the German army came, carried out the most unbelievable tortures of the Jews on their own, killed a veldt of them before Hitler showed up. Maybe I'll talk about that some other time, but you have to have a strong stomach. Same thing to Ukrainians. They're horrible photographs if you want to see them. I'm talking about before the Germans actually showed up, and then, of course, it got even worse. So how are you going to explain that in your national history? How are you going to teach that to your kids? So they don't. They say it's not true, or they'll hide it, or they'll deny it. But it was late in the day. By the 1990s, the Jewish narrative became hardwired. And all these countries in Eastern Europe knew from day one, if they want to survive without being swallowed up again by another Putin, they got to kiss up to America. And so they couldn't go and say, damn the Jews, it was their fault that they died in World War II. They were the big trouble for us. We're happy that they were killed. Now we have a Jew-free country, and we live in their houses, and we have their property and all the rest of it. They couldn't say that. Because if they say that, that'll play into the hands of the Russians and justify the Russians taking over the country again, which is exactly what Putin has been trying to do. He's saying Ukraine is a Nazi place. Lithuania and Latvia are a Nazi place. That's the language he uses. And therefore, we're liberating these nests of anti-Semitism and all the rest of it. Now, I know it's all cynical, and, you know, the Russians don't care about the fact that they were anti-Semitic. The Russians playing anti-Semitic themselves. But they're using these things, they're using these kinds of tropes to justify Russia taking over. So the countries in Eastern Europe who are scared to death of Russia coming back again, they have to keep their big fat mouth shut. and they couldn't say damn the Jews, which is what they would like to say. They're enlightened enough not to say it. And therefore, all they could do was within their own countries, they could pass laws making it also, they have, making it also to say that the people of our country were bad during the Holocaust. There are laws like that. Lithuania, Latvia, I forget where else, a number of countries. It's also true that these countries, since 1990, because they want to kiss up to America, and because of other reasons as well, have actually been friendly to the state of Israel. Partly this is due to the idea of saying, you can't call me anti-Semitic. We helped Israel. We helped Netanyahu. We had him here last week. And we support Israel and the United Nations, which they do. You see? And like, who voted for Israel the other day when the UN condemned him? Like the Czech Republic and stuff like that. You see? So they do. Plus, they're also anti-Muslim because they're afraid that Muslims are taking over Western Europe. Germany and France and Belgium and all this look like they're toast. And they don't. And the Poles and the Hungarians and the Czechs and the others don't want it to happen. And so for that reason, they're also pro-Israel. But when it comes to the Holocaust narrative, they try to point out, hey, we suffered also. They haven't been able to get their message over sufficiently because of the 45-year head start of the Elie Wiesels. Why am I mentioning this? Like I said before, there's a lot of American politicians out there, Democrat and Republican Party. And if you're younger, if you're, let's say, 40s, 50s, so what does that mean? Now it's 2024. If you're in your 40s, you were born around 1980. You're born 30 years after the war was over. More. It's like ancient history. They know it. It's like ancient history. The leftist kind of culture, which the Arabs have been pushing from day one, which says, and this is how they say it, the Holocaust is not as bad as the fact that Israel kicked out the Palestinians in 1948. That's Prust and Pusha to them. This has become something which, if you're a young person, you'll absorb. I had a Holocaust course in college. Believe me, they don't have the impact of the other narrative that I just said before, as we've seen in the last couple of weeks. When people say Israel should be wiped out, it's good what the Muslims, Hamas did on October 7th. American students, others are saying this. And I'm not only talking about the Muslims, them I understand. I'm talking about Americans, including, unfortunately, some Jews and others. Because they've not really grown up with this. They've had Holocaust classes in school and, you know, maybe in college, but too much water's passed under the bridge. And there's all this relativism. They had a Holocaust, after all, in Cambodia. They had a Holocaust in Rwanda. There's a Holocaust going on, I don't know, in other places in the world. There's some truth to that. It's not exactly the way the Nazis were, but the key point is the Jews did not have a unique Holocaust. Whereas the whole point I've been talking about is the Jewish claim that we have a unique Holocaust. Biden is from the Tukufa, where the Jews have a unique Holocaust. I mean, he knows what happened in Rwanda. You know, he knows what happened in Darfur. Yeah, I get that. Doesn't have the same drama and same impact like the unique Holocaust that the Jews suffered in World War II. Because it is, he has seen what Hamas did on October 7th through those lenses. I don't think his administration, certainly the people in the middle and lower level don't see it that way. You see some of these stupid young people. I mean, as best as I can tell, the people in State Department, those kind of places, do not approve what Biden is doing. They want to be pro-Arab. They want to, you know, help the civilians in Gaza, regardless of the fact that Hamas is holding on. You see even Jewish people working in State Department, Defense Department, are quitting and protesting and things like that. And so the thrust in his own bureaucracy is to be anti-Israel. What's interesting is Biden hasn't listened to them. He's a stubborn guy. In this case, it's a good thing he is. And he said, you're all wrong and I'm right. You're not the president, I'm the president. I understand why you have bad feelings about what's happening in Gaza in terms of humanitarian. But Israel's facing an existential crisis, and Israel's experience is unique. You understand? And that's what the other Democrats can't stand, the younger ones. What is it unique? The Jews had a Holocaust. The Palestinians have a Holocaust. The Jews have a genocide. You know, this group had a genocide. One giant says the same as the other. That mass attempt to relativize the Holocaust and deny it if it's uniquely evil features is like a central, in my mind, is a central plank in the Arab position. And a lot of people buy it. But Biden has not bought it. It's interesting to me. And Blinken happens to be the stepson of a famous Holocaust survivor. So he's aware of it also. But it seems to me the younger ones, especially the younger Jews, they know it intellectually, they don't know it emotionally. And even the Holocaust industry, as we call it, you know, has always tried to relativize the Holocaust in the sense of, you know, you see, never again. Not that any other group suffered the same thing the Jews did, but they might. In other words, trying to sell the Holocaust to the guy has to say, well, this is actually something that you should be interested in because it shouldn't happen to another people as well. The Jewish position used to be, and really should still be, which is, it can't happen to another people. It's something specific. As I say, Esau, son of Yaakov. But to the degree that they've succeeded or failed in getting that message out, that's to that degree you see all these young people, especially Jews, being anti-Israel and wanting Israel to be destroyed and go out of business and everything will be better that way. It's unbelievably blind. I read the other day online, you know, there's reform, conservative, reconstruction. The reconstruction is like totally anti-Israel. Totally anti-Israel. You can't even be a student in their rabbinical college if you're pro-Israel. It's crazy. What about the Holocaust? What, everything else? No, it's all relativized. The Jews had a Holocaust, maybe. The Palestinians are now definitely having a Holocaust, which is 10 times worse. That's how they see it. So, as I say again, at the end of the day, the Bunchel runs the world, and they put a guy in there at an advanced age, because Dafka, in my opinion, only somebody who has that memory I just described, somebody who was born during World War II and grew up in the aftermath of World War II, in that culture, when, like I say, all the movies and all the novels and all the things you read in college were all about the unique suffering of the Jews, the unique evil that's perpetrated in Jews, not denying that there were other evils as well. You know, not denying that the Jews are the only ones who suffered. But the Jews had it particularly bad. In a unique way, that's like a Dover Pasha for Biden. You understand? I don't know about his wife, but it's a Dover Pasha for him. And thank God he lives in his own world in that way. Thank God we have somebody that still feels this way. The next president, you know, afterwards, will not have the, I hope I'm wrong, but will not have these feelings. They'll say, no, yeah, there was a Holocaust of this and a Holocaust of that, you know. And when they killed 10 people in this country, it was also a Holocaust. I mean, that's going to band around and use the phrase. But Biden is from a certain tkufa when the Jews owned the whole field. And they got their message out. And nobody ever heard of the Holocaust on the Poles or on the Ukrainians or on the Belarusians and all that, when the Germans killed lots of them. Nobody in America is aware of that. But everybody's aware of the Jewish story. So, to me, this memory is playing a very important part in the current war. And I just wanted to share, I guess, that perspective. People say Biden's too old, all the rest of it. Thank God he's old in the sense that he has the memory of history of the narrative that I just described. Anyway, thanks a lot, Zev Radin, and Mazel Tov on the new Alexander Yaakov, as they said before. And I hope that Grub Bil Torah Chuba Maisim Tovim.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.